He's in a meeting, so I can just, you know, bring it up for the first time, then we can tackle it later if we need to. So basically, you all know when we want to schedule things that are fully online, we use DE-72. But when we want to schedule classes online and also face-to-face, we use DE-71. Now, the DE-71 is for the lecture portion, but we don't have a lab portion that's also online. So it came to my attention that, you know, we've been using DE-71 even for the lab, but we shouldn't be doing that. We need a DE-71L portion as well. So, yeah.
I believe this is Diane, if they want a DE-71L, just submit a health certificate for it to be that.
Okay.
Samantha, it would just get converted to DE or to whatever the MIS came from.
And this is an item on our next meeting for next Thursday in regards to the same topic, because I did confirm with Miriam and we're going to be discussing this in the next MIS committee meeting next Thursday. But basically, if you guys want that code and that code meets that description as MIS dictates, then we can add the code and it will just translate to MIS as the 71 code for XF01. But that would be the main conversation for our MIS meeting. That's basically what it is. If you guys feel like that code meets that qualification, then that code can be added, and it would just be translated on the back end colleague to the 71 code for MIS reporting.
Right, because we do kind of need it, because we do have a DE-72L, but we just don't have a DE-71L.
Right. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And that's basically it's as simple as that we just need to know if you guys indeed do want that code, and that's what I thought there was more discussion, you know, things to address, but for the MIS side, all we need to know is if you want that code, we can add that code for MIS reporting.
Right, which we do. But I guess, yeah, we're discussing that at the next MIS.
Yeah, and we can also do it in an email, but if you like, I can keep it on the agenda as well. But it would just basically be an email from you or Keith and saying that code meets that qualification, and that you want to add it to the MIS, you wanted to add it to colleague as an instruction method for it to be reported to MIS.
Okay.
Sounds
good.
Sam,
okay,
thank you. Thanks, Diane.
Hold on. Just a quick question. So do both colleges need to agree on the use of this code since we're going to be reporting this for MIS? Right?
And that's why we were having it having the discussion at the next MIS meeting. We were supposed to have this discussion two meetings ago, it just didn't work out to where it was going to be. It wasn't discussed at our last meeting because nobody from Crafton showed up.
Okay.
So it's on the next agenda, and we're hoping to get both Valley and Crafton on that conversation.
All right, so let's make sure that we get in writing from both colleges that this is what they want, and that way ongoing reporting will be accurate.
Okay.
Yeah, I think
thanks, guys.
Yeah, on that, I think the critical element for that 71 is that everyone understands it's simultaneous. So the faculty has got to be available for the lab or
for somebody
students.
Talking, but we can't really hear what's being said.
I think the critical element to using 71 is that everyone understands the simultaneous interaction between the faculty and the students. So it's not like students can go do lab and faculty not be available, not be online at that same time. So as long as faculty and students, or well, the faculty understands that it's simultaneous. It's not like the hybrid where you put an online assignment, the student does it, and the faculty is doing whatever another.
Yeah, so basically, Sam and Miriam, when you guys discuss it in your MIS meeting, at your next meeting, it's important that the use of this new code is understood amongst both colleges. That way, when whoever's putting it into the system, And then when we report the numbers, it's accurately reporting the right data.
Okay. Christina wanted to talk about external equate data.
Try to do a demo of something. Is that big enough for everybody? Okay, so this is a customized dashboard. They made this based on the specifications we gave them. It's 100% customizable. And what we did was we exported all of our current equate data out of test, and they're building all of our equivalencies for us. So we're not starting from scratch.
So this is stuff that I have built already?
Yes. Yes. We pulled all records going back to the beginning of tests, and they're building them all for us, so we're not starting from scratch. And that's a part of the setup that comes with this product.
Kristen?
Yes.
When you say test, what do you mean?
Test, I'm sorry, College Source?
The transfer equivalency system.
There you go. Not your test.
Yes, not
no. Andy's doing this. No.
Test in bar. I thought
I thought she meant that too.
Oh.
That's why I was like,
sorry.
It's College Source's transfer equivalency system.
No, evaluation system.
Or transfer evaluation system.
Yeah.
Okay.
Tests.
So this
So these are the equivalencies between our college and other colleges, or their college and other colleges.
Test and test.
Okay. I thought you thought we were saying you were going to do all this work.
Let me give a little background to those that aren't familiar with TESS, and maybe Michelle can, since she does have experience with it, can fill in some of the gaps that I have. TESS, Transfer Equivalency System from College Source. College Source is a tool that the colleges use to look up catalog information for other institutions.
Yeah.
The evaluators and counselors use it quite a bit, especially the evaluators, to look up different accreditation information, course equivalency information, things like that. And with TESS, it allows us to enter in those equivalencies. So if the evaluator evaluates and says, okay, English 1A from RCC is equivalent to our English 101, we can record that in the system, in that TESS system. And once it's recorded, it allows other users of the system, counselors, to be able to go in and look it up and see, oh, this course has already been equated, so I know that 1A from RCC is equivalent to our 101. And they don't have to ask the evaluator, hey, is this an equivalent course? So things like that. So it's a database of those equates. Did I miss anything, Michelle? Christina?
That's about as much as I know.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay, so this goes back to the EPI project. We were trying to figure out how to get those external equivalencies into Degree Planner to account for the students coming in. And this is what they built for us. Again, this is customized to what Crafton wanted. If Valley's interested, they could have this customized however they wanted as well. So this is the main database that shows you the ones that were already built. And you have your basic information here, your sender institution, their catalog years that it equates to, their course ID, the units, you know, our course that it equates to, titles, you know, and same thing for the catalog years. And then what we had them add, if you guys would be interested in, is, this will scroll over, the areas that it meets for our local GE, IGETSE, and the CSU GE.
And those fields were actually requested by counselors.
Yes. So that way, once they're identified for that specific catalog year, so you know that this course here, I'm sorry, I'm used to being able to read all the way across. Computer slow.
I know. It's the connection.
Okay, so let's say Alan Hancock's Anthro 101 for 2014-15 edition. We know it meets the Crafton local GE pattern for area B for that same catalog year. So it doesn't need to be referred back to the GE sheets every time. That's already logged in here. Now, what they're going to do with this is each year they're going to roll this over for us from one catalog to the next. So everything with the currently 17-18 catalog year, they'll roll it to 18-19, and then we would have an administrator go through and clear any of those out that have been deemed to no longer equate, and then the evaluators would continue to create new ones as they go. So it'll constantly building and maintain database from year to year rather than having to rebuild it or go back in and manually end them.
Can we build in notes in here?
Yes. Yes, and I'll get to that field. And you can have anything show that you'd like as well. This is just what we have as our default view. So these are the completed evaluations. There's a second dashboard that's your proposed evaluations. That's the same thing. So it separates those that have been fully approved and those that are in process, so you can see where they land. Now these are just sample ones that we've been putting in to show.
Let me pause there for a sec too. So this is a workflow issue. So I'm not sure how the workflow is at Valley. At Crafton, we want counselors to have a question about if a course is equivalent or not, to be able to go into the system, put in a proposed equate, have it go to the evaluators. The evaluators will evaluate the course and determine if it is equated or not, and then enter that equate into the system. And that way the evaluator then has that as a reference, and once it's entered into the system, other counselors will be able to see it once it's entered into the system. So that's our workflow, so that anyone that's thinking, hey, this course at X university is coming into our institution, what does it equate to? They can put in a request to have that course equated or evaluated, and the evaluators will then work on that request through this system.
Oh, are you done? I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Okay.
Sorry.
Okay, so on this front page too, on the main dashboard, you can search across all fields, and it's like I put in as soon as it catches up. It's getting there.
Christina, you said this was a sample right here that you're putting in coursework, right?
Yes.
Is this sample based on saying you're doing one student's evaluation? Are these all the courses that maybe that student has taken?
No, this is the database of the approved coursework, or the approved equates. All historical equates everything that you were building in tests, that's exactly what this is.
So what we did was we exported the list of equates that were built into tests, and they took 50 or so of the records that were in there.
Oh,
just as a sample.
That's what I was wondering.
Yeah, because this is just a sample.
Oh yeah, this is just a sample set.
They took 50 of the records and put them into this just as a proof of concept for us.
Yes. Rather than just saying, well, this is what we imagined it doing, they actually went in and built it, specific to Crafton, so we could see that it was what we wanted. And the only thing that we added after pulling it from test was those local IGETC and CSUG patterns, and we pulled that from historical catalogs and just added that data in. So if you search in this top area here, what it does is it'll search across all the fields, anywhere that says the BIOL, or biology, in there. Now, you can also search by individual columns. So if I were to type it in here, it would only look for sender course institutions that contained those letters. And that's for all fields across the board. So you can do specific certs or overall searches. Now, if you're going to actually start an evaluation, go into here. And then this is the default form they set up for us. We were already going to do some modifications to it, like we're going to have them be able to add attachments without limit. We're going to go through and identify which fields will be required versus which are optional. But these were an exact match from what we pulled out of the college source, the ones that were required. And as for this institution OPID here, the Office of Post-Secondary Identification Number, I've already provided them the 1718 listing of that, and it's going to automatically autofill from a secondary database once you put in the send institution information. So when you're putting this in, and then it's catching up. So then it's set to have all of our subject codes already, so there's no misspellings, some data integrity there. And we're going to set a couple of these other fields up there too to be like that. It's down at the bottom. We put the GE patterns. We put all the available options in there for them to select from, including a not applicable. That way it just doesn't get overlooked or skipped. you know, and again, this is something that we're doing here at Crafton, doesn't mean that you're required to do this. But you can choose which fields are required and which fields you want to add or remove. And then down here at the bottom, this is where you put in your evaluator information. So this feeds into your tracking. And it tells you the time and all, and the time of creation. And even if that does get skipped, I'll show you on the workflow that all does get recorded. But with this, it's on limited user licensing per campus. So it'll come with access for all counselors, evaluators. I'm assuming I'll probably be working as administrator on this. I'm not sure on that. So it is open-ended licensing on this for the set fee.
You have it through Smart Catalog, which Valley doesn't have. So
it's a secondary product. Okay. It's just linked to our catalog because ours is going to pull from
our catalog.
It does not require
a
Smart Catalog.
Product.
Yes.
Okay. Are there other features on this?
Yes.
Database?
Yeah. I'm going to get there in just 1 second. So with the user licensing on the campus, it also comes with licensing to the degree data software, which there's this, when you're filling this out, if you need to look at the SEND Institutions catalog to refer back to it, you would go to the degree data. Now, it's not linked right now because it's a proof of concept. So, but I did open it up in a secondary screen to show you what their site is. And this is where you get a lot more of your similarity to TESS.
So this is like looking up a catalog in TESS.
Yes. So you go to search. Now the license for this comes at, in the same fee. Did you already, have you ever been on here before?
No.
Okay, well, somebody used up the free trials on this computer.
I don't think so.
Oh, but are you logged into your work one?
Yes.
Which you usually are there, because I had you look at this before when I was there last time.
No, you just gave me
No, I'm
screens.
Talking at the last dog. I had
oh, you did?
Yeah.
Oh, maybe so.
Okay.
Oh, yeah.
So, okay, well, I didn't realize we were going to do that, but can I look from your primary screen?
You can do whatever you want.
Okay. Let's do that. Everybody's looking at me. I can't type and people look at me.
I thought you were going to show us something different. I said, I've never done it like that.
Okay. So let's try this. Man. Okay. I thought I was going to outsmart it. Well, we'll just look at the background here. Once you had the license to actually get in here, you could search by state, institution type, so you can do your two-year, private, four-year, and you can dwindle it down by that, an area of study, or if you knew the exact institution you were looking for. And when you go to search that, it would pull out the catalog in a PDF format for you to search, but you can do, it has a search feature, so you don't have to just, you know, scroll through it. It's the, what do you call that?
They link to that institution's actual catalog for that year, whether it be an online catalog or
no.
A PDF.
No, they actually pull it in and they house it in a secondary base.
Okay.
Yeah. Because we talked about if it changed. And that's why they go out and they collect those and bring them in.
Oh, is that amended or something?
Yeah, in case the links change. But, you know, it's not pictures of it, so it's searchable text is what I was getting at. So you don't have to actually scroll through it. But the big difference between this and the College Source product, College Source, you can only search for other colleges that pay to have their catalog housed in their environment that also pay for their service. So I have all the numbers because I researched tests on this too and tried to see, you know, what was theirs compared to ours, compared to degree data. And the college count, there's a significant difference because with the degree data software, they go out and they pull every publicly available catalog. The only thing that they do not house or maintain is ones that they don't have the license to do it because they're privately held. Some institutions, I guess, will not allow you to redistribute their catalogs. But anything that is publicly available on a website, they house it whether they pay for their service or not. So they have a much larger collection of catalogs available. Which, if we could get in here, you would see. But, I'm going back to that. So, and you can also set in links too within the descriptions if you want to do a link directly to their page or to that catalog. You know, you're not limited to just text. So once you submit this, let's go to the proposed evaluations.
The person making the request as well, they can put in what course they think that the course will equate to at your institution, but they don't have to. So, you know, in the English 1A from RCC, you know, if the counselor says, you know, I think it's English 101 here, they can put in English 101, but it doesn't require that. If they don't know what course it equates to, they can leave it blank and just send it to the evaluators to research and see, does it equate to anything? Does it equate to unit area credit for IGETC or something like that?
Is it gonna eliminate like paper flow, meaning like the prerequisite clearances or?
No, because that's a separate process. This is for evaluating a course, evaluating a course for equivalencies. Evaluating a course for prerequisites is still a different request.
Well, and we have different processes in the two colleges because crafted, if the counselor finds, if they looked in here and found it was equivalent and there was a prerequisite, they could go into it. I think in your case, the request goes to so our counselors are entering prerequisite.
No, again, this is, it's 100% customized, so yeah, I haven't dealt with entering the equates like you have, or even being that your college for that matter. So any of these can be removed, additional fields can be added. The reason that these ones are here now is because this is exactly what I pulled out of the extract from College Source and had them implement into here. And you can decide if they're all required or none are required. You know, it's 100% customizable by campus. So once it's been submitted, a proposal, you'll see over here on, there we go. Right button. There we go. So over here on the left, it has an automatic audit trail. So it'll show you, right now there's only the Crafton Hills admin and myself in here. So you're not going to see too much difference, but you know, if Michelle initiated it and then it, you know, got sent to Marco and then from there it had to get sent onto a department chair, it would track each of that and tell you whose queue it's sitting in, and it will also tell you what they did. So this person created it here. So you can't see it too clearly up there, but it tells you, you know, this was creation, it's sitting in their inbox ready for review. If there was a denial, an approval, or if there were specific notes for a field that that individual needed to look at, it would show down here.
Does College Source have an audit?
Yes.
It does.
It does.
Like this?
I just don't use it. And I tried using it, but we didn't get to that point.
Okay, now the other thing on this is you can identify the permissions within each user set on this audit trail. So you can identify which types of users based on what, however we code them, whether or not they have the access to create, to do approvals, to review, to suggest, to make changes, and that could be by user class or by individual. So that's 100% customizable.
Well, we usually ask the discipline expert as well. We ask the instruction, the department.
Yes.
How they view this course. It's not just us determining, oh, okay, you know, we have guidelines, but there are times when we have to refer the matter to the discipline expert in a particular division and department.
Yeah, so we have the same.
That's shown on the audit trail.
Yes, so that's called Dynamic Workflow, that product that they have. It's a secondary thing that comes with this as well, and it's customizable. Based on each campus and how you want to set it up. So you can have it flagged where when it hits a certain level, whether it's the evaluator or the counselor, they make that decision if it needs to go to the department head, and it can auto get pushed to, if it's a math, to the math department head, or the math department faculty, or if it's an ENGL course, it gets pushed to the English faculty based on those subject codes.
So,
you could set it up a couple different ways.
Yeah.
Yes, you could, like Michelle just said, if you go that route where you want the faculty chairs to be involved, then they have to have logins, they have to have access privileges, things like that, which might get a little difficult to maintain over the years. Or you could just have the primary person, like what we will probably do at Crafton is have the primary people, the evaluators, be the ones to be able to flag it in here and say, okay, sending to the discipline for review, so that it's noted on the record that it's being sent to the discipline, but then they will manually follow up with, okay, let's send this to the discipline, let's get their input, and then when the discipline makes a decision, then the evaluator is the one that comes back into the system and records the data, so that we don't have to worry about training the discipline leads when they change, do they change sometimes from year to year, things like that, just for ease of process. But you can set up the workflow however you want on.
Yeah, and we can send it to a hold queue, so it's identified in the audit trail that's on hold, and it's not just sitting in Kristen's inbox. And you know, so others have ability to go in there, and it's logged and it's tracked how many days it's sitting in there. And when it goes to a new area, we can have it set up where it will automatically email the individual responsible for whoever's queues it's in. So you don't not responsible for going in every day and checking it. Do I have something there? It can be set up in the background to flag it in an email. You have something in your queue. Please go in and review.
It's kind of like similar to that electronic workflow
thing. Yeah. The other thing I wanted to point out is that with permissions per user, with tests, one of the big issues we had was in order to give a user access to request an equivalency, that person also had the same access to create an equivalency. And we don't necessarily want that. For example, at counselors, we don't want them to create the equivalency. We want them to send the request to the evaluators. So we want the evaluators to have the permissions to create the equivalency. TESS doesn't allow that, but if we give them one, we give them all, and that was a problem. This will eliminate that issue, where we can kind of secure that and say, okay, you have permissions to look at the data and request, but you don't have approved permissions.
Yeah, and that's, you know, 100% customizable, just like with Starfish, how we can say this class can initiate, can review, but cannot approve, or they can approve and they can review, but they cannot initiate. And that would be set up there. So you would see other buttons, you know, in here, you know, if it was the, say, for the evaluator's permission, if you have the approve, the reject, there could be a third button there that says send to department head. And then that department head would be pulled based off of that subject code up above from the drop down. As soon as it unfreezes, there we go. So, and it really just however you guys would want it set up is how it would be there. It is printable, and it is comparable. So you can go in there and see what changed from one version to the next. I don't know how many people use CreakyNet that often on the change course summary. It's similar to that, where it'll have it crossed out if it was eliminated, highlighted in red if it was added. And you can choose which versions to compare. On this, there's only two. But if you want to see the original, and then say there was a fifth version, you want to see what changed from point A to point, you know, C, and who changed it, because it also carries the audit trail over here. You could choose those two side by side, and it will show you the comparison between the two. I don't know if anything was ever actually changed on this one, if it'll show on this. My computer doesn't like me.
Me either. That was already discussed with what you were talking about, right?
Yes. Yes. Okay. Yes. Oh, you have a mouse.
Uh-huh. I thought you just didn't want to use it.
I didn't know you had it. Okay. And so then, too, we were asked about the comments earlier. You could have the comments public and private. So if there's ones you only wanted people with evaluator access to have on there, or counselor and evaluator access, they wouldn't be available for public view or external view, or you could even limit that to it's only evaluators would see it, not necessarily even counselors, or just counselors and not evaluators, depending on however you wanted to set that up. So it could be by permission class.
And again, it's customizable, so you could add, yeah, if you wanted a different notes field on there, or to change the label on it, you could have them make that customization for you.
Yeah. So go back to the completed evaluations and then show you what it looks like on. If you clicked into it, you get the little summary page that will have you the send information, sender institution information, received institution.
Why is my name still on there?
Because this is one that we took out of tests. This was the one that you had built.
We extracted it from tests. So
and it carried over with whoever the initial evaluator was that built it and the date that it was built.
Remember I told you we're not losing the work that you did?
Can we have a series?
No,
And again, that's as part of the setup cost. They're going to be building all of our standing for us, and then there's just the hosting fee each year, which I don't know if we want to get into that just yet. And this is specifically for Crafton, but our hosting fee is less than half of what we're paying for tests.
Which is?
We're going to be paying $1,500 a year for hosting.
Well, right now, so for tests, we're paying about $3,200
a year.
And this would be $1,500.
And now the transferology piece, I know you were looking, I'm sorry, good job. The transferology, I started down that path to look at it, and between these two systems, you, with the test, you would need to add that transferology piece to be able to do some of the things that this can do. And that was going to be an additional, I have the paper here, I think it was $5,400 for us, so we were looking at, what's that, do the math, $9,000 a year? To do what we do for 15.
MTEs,
it's based on FTE, so that was just for Crafton, so yours would be larger. Now, the other thing that comes with this, if I could get into the degree data, I don't know how concerned this group would be with it, but something you should be aware of. It comes with a separate set of access for your curriculum team, where if they're looking at new program modifications, new programs, or maybe even program, what do you call it? When they're going to like discontinue, program discontinuance, you can search the programs specifically in external catalogs to see how they set them up and what their program objectives and outcomes are. And that piece comes available for your curriculum staff. So this is more than just for counselors and for evaluators. It's also on the instructional side of the house.
I think the big item, though, for us is with all the work we're putting into the grade planner, this is going to be able to build those equates into the ed plan.
Yeah.
So why don't you talk about that? Because I don't think we've talked about that.
No, we haven't. I'm sorry. I was trying to give just an overview on this first. So from this, you know, that would still come back to Dog on how exactly we were going to handle that, I guess. But they have a contract with a preferred vendor called iData, which is like a secondary hub where they prepare the extract from this. They send it to iData. Now, iData is partners with both Aleutian and Hobson's. There's a trusted source with them where they push the data into those two. Now, we still run into the issue where we don't have the same equates or external equates between the two campuses. So we would have to run the route of, this has been talked about on the EPI calls, the like pseudo courses. Mm-hmm. Now, we can also have pseudo courses housed within this system as placeholders that are not available to the public view. So it would meet specific areas like IGETSE area. I never know if it's the one or the A, but whether it's the number or the lever, we would have placeholders here that we would then also equate out to those external ones coming in, even if they don't necessarily equate to anything at our campus. And then we could push those into DataTel from that side, our colleague. And we would have those pseudo courses, like they were talking about housing in Hobson's as well, to meet those areas.
Or the other option is just to push it directly into Hobson's.
Yes, because they're also set up with iData as well.
See, that's the thing, and that's what I had asked during the MPI call. Does it have to be, does the decision have to come from both campuses, or can one campus do something and the other campus do another?
Well, the problem with doing the pseudo courses, those get overridden in Hobson. So those, if we were going to do a pseudo course to equate, those would have to be done in DataTel.
Well, I mean, ideally, I think we'd want to do something mutual anyway, if possible. I mean, ideally, I think we would be preferred if we could just import the data into Colleague, but we have the equates between the two campuses that stop that from working. So the workaround is to create pseudo courses for the areas, and then we could equate to those pseudo courses to give the student the credit, and that way the pseudo course could be college specific.
Yes.
So that's the workaround. So if we're going to import into Colleague, we probably would have to go that route. But I think if you're going to import into just straight Hobson's,
then I believe it would have to be agreed upon.
Yeah.
Because you wouldn't be able to do pseudo courses in Hobson's. Are you on the call, Michael? Guess not. The course files get overrun. What is it, weekly? Those get imported into?
The course files are imported, I think. Let me check right now. I'm working on something at the moment. Let me check.
But they are imported, right? They're not?
Yes.
Yeah, they're imported, so they would be overridden at that point. With the regular courses, yeah. Yeah, so a colleague would be the ideal for that matter. And then that, I guess that would open it up for the campuses to go different routes, but that all depends. Because like I said, when I spoke with, is it Michael? John? I forget. At College Source, they did not want to do any sort of import because it was a conflict of interest for them. Because it was routing, it's, even if it was going through colleague, it was still routing for a degree planner. And that's their U Achieve product, which is only $15,000 extra per year. If you wanted to add that.
Yeah, so I wanted to talk to them when we were at the conference.
Yeah. And I have all the information that I've, you know, talked to them on. You know, I printed out, I'm willing to share. I can send on electronically all the data from each. And a couple of the things that stood out that alarmed me. When it comes to, I was saying that the degree data, they house all catalogs that are publicly available. And if they're missing one, you let them know, they'll either add it if you have it, or they'll go out and search for it to bring it in. But according to College Source themselves, California is ranked as the second top requested school that does not has non-subscribing catalogs. So California is the second most missing from anybody else in their system. There are also 97,000 students per year are looking for non-subscribing schools in California, and they cannot oblige because they're not subscribed to tests. So these are just some of the lists. You know, in fact, I can just give you this piece if you'd like, because this is directly from them, along with the quote they gave us. Now, I don't know what your headcount, College Source is based on headcount. So our headcount was 5,937 when they quoted me for $6,000.
What was it for?
Just for the transferology piece to add on to the 3,200 we're currently paying to make it do the same thing.
Per person.
Oh, I don't know the math on that. I just know it's based on headcount. But if you want, Marco, I can pass this on to you. That's their data. Another thing that was nice about this system is they're able to do the single login.
Single sign-on?
Single sign-on, yeah. Because I don't remember my passwords for anything, but I don't know about you guys. What else do we have? We talked about the iData, the pseudo courses, the attachments, and the email alerts. Those are also customizable in your workflow. So you can have it send one once it's in their inbox, and you can also have it set up, you know, if they haven't addressed it, in, you know, 7 days or 8 days, whatever you want to do, you can send out those reminders, and those are auto-generated to send out, and you can even set up the text in advance, similar to what our Starfish is. You know, it's an automated message, automatic flag that's sent out as a little friendly reminder. You know, you have 10 days or you're fired, kind of thing. So that's pretty much what I have. If you guys are interested, I can pass on. I have worked with this company. Yes, they are our catalog company, but you don't need the catalog portion for this to work. We will be linking it to our catalog as well. So students that are external students that are coming back to the area, they can use this system to say, you know, I'm coming home for the summer and I want to take the class. I need to know what equates back to my school. And then it'll flag them to our catalog to show them, hey, here's the biology 101 for you to take at home, which is, yes, similar to the transferology piece. So it actually helps from an advertising front for the college as well, just a little bit. I had a thought in my head. I don't know where it went. But I can pass on the information. I have worked with them before. They are 100% about customization. That is their big draw, their big pill, this vendor. And I've never gotten more than a couple of hours. Joe can attest to the customer service as well, standards from this vendor. I've never worked with any company like them, any place that I've worked where it's, you know, no, the phone never goes unanswered. Doesn't matter the time of day. And you always get that call back, even on weekends. And they're willing to do that annual rollover for us as well. And they can even do like an audit trail file at the end of the year where they could push all this out and show you what was added, what was removed, what was eliminated, so you can make sure that when they automatically roll over the 17-18 to the 18-19, that everything that ended did get ended. That's not still appearing, and it'll actually show everything that was removed. So there's a lot of accountability features in this, a lot of data integrity.
And who would be responsible for doing the adding removing?
That would be based how your college wants to move it. You can identify one or multiple administrators, your evaluators, however you guys want to set that up.
That depends on your workflow.
Yeah.
And administrators within the system, not Mark.
Yeah.
What's the website again?
It's degreedata.com. If you want to try it out, that's the secondary license that comes with it. Mm-hmm. So you won't be able to get to this little dashboard. But that'll show you how to search the catalogs and everything available. And you get like 3 free searches. And apparently Joyce was so excited she already went through all of them.
Sure.
So is there anything else, any questions you guys like to see? I'll pass on their information if you guys wanted to reach out to them.
Do they have a website?
The software is through academiccatalog.com. And then degreedata.com is that secondary licensing that allows you to search all catalogs.
Okay.
And then iData, that's probably the one that the DCS group is probably a little more interested in looking at. I don't know if you guys recall, I asked a couple of meetings back if anybody had any familiarity with them. Their name's been coming up a lot lately. I guess they're the big push now between a lot of companies and colleagues. So, for iData, yeah.
So we're moving to this July?
We're working on moving toward it, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, ideally, yeah, probably July, because it's a contract, so we would need to stop our contract with TESS, College Source, and start with this.
Yeah.
So we're working on moving in that direction.
Yeah, we're hoping to have it up before the fall, so over the summer, and then we can offer some training at the top of fall.
From my perspective, we had spoke the potential for what will happen with the replanner, as well as the fact that we're getting to our point, which was we were where we can't afford. And we need to find places to cut. So this is a place to cut $2 and get the same value, and also hook up to our, I mean, for us, there's an advantage to hook up to our.
But I think the bigger value is just that, the money savings, and that it's going to go into the big planner. That's,
yeah.
That to me is the biggest value.
Okay.
It's an application account on CCC Apply. The state assigns, the chancellor's office assigns them a unique ID per student, supposed to be. When they submit the application to us, then we get that, we store that in Kali. There's a lot with Starfish and Canvas. There's a lot of applications that the state is having all the colleges try to use. And to tie into a lot of those things, they want us to be able to send the CCC ID to them when the student logs in. So to make that process, to be able to help manage that process, they have something called an SSO proxy. The idea is that we only have to worry about integrating with the proxy as far as single sign-on is concerned, and they'll integrate with any of the other state applications. So Canvas, Starfish, CCC Apply for staff to administrate, and any other applications the state comes up with. The issue that we were looking to find, the idea is that the proxy will also make sure each student has a CCC ID. If we don't have one to send them, they'll ask the student to go and find their account in a CCC Apply to associate that. So we were going through seeing how many students that would affect, because they would be able to, for example, once we turned it on, they wouldn't be able to get into Canvas until they go and do that association. We found that there were, just for example, the ones that registered in the last 3 terms, there are about 2,000 students that didn't have CCCIDs in college. And that's was a little surprising because there shouldn't be a way for them not to have it. So we're looking at why that was the case. One thing we did find out is that there are multiple students that have multiple CCCIDs. And so we're trying to find out why that's happening. For the ones that we did look at, in some of the cases, it was looks seems to be a behavior of the application import. Apparently, students will create multiple CCC apply accounts for different email addresses. It's probably because they forgot the account or they changed their email. Don't know, but that's possible what happens. That's what the chancellor's office said. And so in those cases, we need to update the application import to replace it with the latest CCCID that we've received, rather than keep each one. So that's should be a relatively simple change. But you got to go back in there and fix it. So find out any of those students that have multiple CCCIDs, find the latest one and keep it. When you're going through that, we also found some cases where the applications that got merged onto one student were not for that student. They weren't all for that student. Some of the cases were that the SSN was typed in incorrectly by the student. In this case, there were two students that had almost nearly the same SSN, but two numbers were switched. And so it merged it to the other student. In that case, we need to go and assign it to the right student. And then there's a case of where these were actually two different students. They didn't provide an SSN, but they still were merged onto the same one. They actually had almost the same name, exactly two. They were apparently twins. So almost everything was the same. In that case, it needs to be corrected so it's on the right one. The problem is there's a lot of them, and we don't have the information to make that correction. That was a decision that was made by admissions in most cases when they go and process the application. So one thing we need is we need to get those errors fixed. Now, I talked to Larry about this before, and there was some concern about what the CCCID would give the students access to at the chancellor's level. At this time, there's only one thing it would give them access to if we sent the wrong ID, is the if they did any work in the maybe it was the portfolio system, they can open that up with a CCC apply account. And so if we send the wrong ID, it would give them access to that account. Beyond that, there's things that wouldn't work rather than, you know, give the wrong information. There was... I'm going to forget what it was. Samantha had told me that at the MIS is been told that they would be having an SSID coming from as part of the application due to some other issues that they're having that's not out. We're not able to access that yet. This is the K-12 ID assigned at the school level, at the state level. That would let the counselor look up high school transcripts for the account. And the other part reason why that was noticed at the time is that the CCCID is actually supposed to be part of MIS. It's optional right now, meaning we don't have to provide one, but there's no telling when that's going to change. It's just still currently optional. So we have to look at getting the CCCIDs to get corrected. So the question for Dog is about getting these IDs fixed, how we want to fix them, and then how to handle the accuracy of these IDs. The proxy will let us, for example, to simply decide to not give out the CCC ID to the proxy. It means every student will be asked to find their CCC apply account and associate it at the proxy level. That information won't come back to us, so we'll not get what the student chose. But that wouldn't fix MIS. Eventually, we would need to fix that if they start making it require. So, any questions?
So, the issue of fixing the data that we have, you said it's about 2,000 records?
There's 2,000 that do not have CCC IDs. That was from the count for the last three terms. In the agenda, there's a count for all students in colleague. I gave a list for like overall students, but there's no idea when they're going to come back. And I started giving accounts for specific terms. For example, spring that we just had, there was about 14,000 that didn't have CCC IDs. And there was about 400, by the time I ran these numbers, which was earlier in May,
so
there was about 300, there's about 500 in just the spring and summer, summer and fall.
It is very possible that those students, and probably a majority of those students, may not have CCC apply IDs. If a student attended and applied to either one of our colleges back in 2000, when we had the homegrown application, and they've been attending or registering and being listed as an active student, even
continually,
if they've taken a PE course, and they've been attending every semester, you know, or been counted as a continuing student, not losing catalog rights, so they might miss one semester, but then they come back the next semester and take another PE course, they could still be counted as a continuing student and would have never applied through CApply and therefore would not have a CCC ID.
Right. They would have to create one once the SSO process turned on.
That's if they're going to use whatever system that is to send them out that we're sending along. What are those systems?
The SSO proxy is what would send it out.
Right, and we'd be in it. Access what? Like, what is it?
Canvas and Starfish specifically for students.
So it's not, basically it's not optional. They're going to have to go through that if they're going to be.
Canvas, it's been made part of the Canvas renewal contract that we have to have the proxy.
So I guess my question is, these students don't have a CCC apply ID. There's nothing that we can do. I mean, our
correct
policy says, you know, that they're a continuing student. We don't have to require them to reapply.
Right.
We can't require them to reapply unless they miss two
right
terms.
The ones that we need to correct are the ones with multiple IDs.
Okay. So that's what I was getting to, is what do we need to correct? Because I don't think we're going to be able to correct those that don't have a CCC ID. So those that have multiple IDs, I think you had a suggestion, or maybe not, maybe I misunderstood, on how to correct them? Or is
so,
it something that's going to require staff to go through and manually look at each one?
At this point, we'd have to manually correct them. The as far as the system, we can make it so that it won't do it again. It'll always replace the ID that's on the account when you merge it. But that doesn't solve the problem of, say, you know, identified as the wrong student because they fat fingered their SSN. But we at least need to get look at the IDs on there, find out which one applies to this student specifically, and keep it.
So are those the numbers right there we're talking about? So 228
yeah
for Crafton and 602 for Valley?
Yes. That was as of the time
IDs
I ran this.
That need to be corrected.
Yes, that as of the time I ran this.
Okay.
So
go ahead.
Where exactly does the correction have to occur? Is it
in Kali?
So
for example, we can go to you can go look up the applications for you can look at the applications from those CCC IDs,
mm-hmm,
and find out which one most matches the student. And if they both match the student, just the latest one, and then make sure that's the only ID in it.
So it would be going into DADD and deleting out the oldest one or the incorrect one. But that also requires the staff to have access to the report center,
yep,
on CCC Apply to go and look up both IDs and see which one is the most recent or correct record.
Yes.
And then correct it on DADD.
Yes.
So it's pretty intensive. It's a lot of work for a staff member. Jason, I had expressed this a concern before because, you know, and I'm sure Valley has a concern about it too, for a couple reasons. You know, one, they have more records that they have to correct. Is there a timeline that we need to have this done by? Because with staffing concerns, I'm worried about how soon this has to be done.
Andy, did you ever get a response from Wynn? If simply being in progress of working on the proxy,
yeah,
is enough to meet
it's
the contract?
Not, there's nothing, in my view, the Canvas is not going to be in jeopardy because as long as we're currently working and actively working towards it, we can show progress, that they're not going to deny us another contract with Canvas. As for MIS, right now they're not making it a requirement, so we have time. It hasn't done within this fiscal year or something.
But will those students have access to Canvas if they're not corrected?
If we don't, if we, for example, we don't turn on the proxy until we're done updating them, it won't block anybody.
So ideally, we would want to finish this first before the turn on.
Ideally, yes. If we, if for example, we get to a point where we need to launch it because of something's changed, we can go far as, for example, all the ones that have multiple IDs to simply not provide one for them. And the student will be required to put one in there, and when we get the right one, or the student applies again and gets a new one, that'll get sent up and it'll use that one instead.
So I think first what needs to happen is we need to make sure that the import process, and it might already be doing this, I thought that it matched 100% on the CCC ID if it existed. And if one didn't, it did exist in the system, that it said that that student wasn't a match, but I could be wrong on that.
Okay, that's not a good way of doing it?
That may be, but I believe that's how it's doing it. Again, it's been a long time, so we have to look at that. But
yes.
What I think needs to happen first is to fix the import process to make it do what we need it to do.
Right.
So that it, if it's going to overwrite an ID or whatever the case is, that we fix that first so that we're not creating more records.
Yeah.
And meanwhile, we can work on correcting the records that are out there. And then once the import process is updated, then we get a final list of records that we need to fix.
Now, the one problem that this is going to provide is because it's possible for the CCID to be wrong, should we may need to look at some point of providing a way a student for the way a student to see it.
How is it wrong?
In the case of the one that we saw, it's that there were two students that submitted an application. They submitted the application with the same SSN. But the actual student's SSN was transposed. And apparently they did it themselves. And when they were merged, it was merged onto the one student account that matched. So the one student account that matched has got two CCC IDs, one of them wrong. The other one has no CCC IDs.
They should only have one CCC ID.
Students will create multiple accounts. The only requirement on CCC Apply side for creating an account is a unique email address.
No, that's not true. If you have a social, it will also stop you from creating an account if the social is already in the system.
And the social is not required.
I know, but that's the only time is if it's a social, if they don't have a social or don't list it.
Right, and one of the cases we did look at, it seemed to be the right student on both applications, but the second one was a different CCC ID. They didn't provide a social. As far as having multiple CCC IDs part of the application process is, it doesn't add on CCC IDs, it just replaces them when they get a new application. That doesn't prevent it from being wrong. Identifying a unique student is not an easy problem.
So with that, Jason, if we're going to be, I'm not comfortable with the idea of just replacing an ID in our system. Especially if there's still a chance that it can be wrong. I would want it cataloged somewhere and maybe deactivated, but that I'd want there to be a history of the old ID somewhere. Because if we do get it where it, we get one where it's wrong and it overwrote it, and now we've got to go remove that ID, and we don't have a record of what the old ID was to put it back, now we've messed up that student's record. So I'd want some sort of history of the old ID before it replaces it on the DADD.
Wouldn't you be able to get that from the download center?
From the report center?
Yeah.
Not easily.
No, because it looks at it as a separate ID, a separate account. It's not going to know of a second ID.
It doesn't have our ID number. You would have to say, look up the student by name or SSN to find their application. And if they didn't provide an SSN or the name was different, it's going to be difficult to find. So that wouldn't be a good replacement. I believe the current functionality in the application is a configured, delivered process. I don't know if that, of being able to, for example, to archive the old ones is a possible process.
Yeah, So, but that's what I'm saying is to make this modification, I think that's going to be necessary. We might have to modify the current import process to move that data somewhere to have a history. Because, like I said, if you have John coming in and, you know, Jack coming in and Jack's ID number gets put on John's and John's ID number gets deleted and then we realize it and we've got to fix it, now we've deleted off of John's ID number, but we don't have John's old ID number that actually was correct to put it back on the record
right. Without
a history. So I think that's part of updating the application, that import process, to fix this issue. I think that we need to look at...
Is there a way to write an informal report to look at those fields and maybe save it off in an Excel document?
This would be an ongoing archiving process.
No.
Informer would be a snapshot in time.
Why would it be ongoing?
Because it happened at the time the application's imported.
Right. Except for the parts where the application was merged incorrectly, where it was merged correctly, it wouldn't. That's the one where we need to fix that going forward.
Right.
And that's where it would be. The fix is to replace the ID that's in colleague with the one from the new application.
Mm-hmm.
And that if it's merged incorrectly, that would blow away the old ID. And informer would have no way of accessing the old ID.
Right. So you run an informer report before we do any of this. We have versions of it, right? So if you ever need to look back, then we have the history. And then you can keep running versions of it as we make changes. And eventually we get to a point, after we make changes to the application download process, that these issues won't be duplicated. So you will have a running history of all the IDs that were associated with student, right? In an Excel document that we can put away somewhere.
The issue there would be tying in when informer makes a snapshot to before applications are processed. That would be difficult.
It's more or less when informer is ran versus when the changes are done.
Yes.
That's what we need to keep track of.
Yes.
That's not that hard.
We have to control when the application is processed, and it must coordinate when the informer runs.
Reports can be run individually by A&R, right? And they could tag it how they want it needed to be tagged, and archive it somewhere.
Before they pull the application.
What do you think about that?
That would work, but...
I'm not sure I understand what you're suggesting.
That part of the application processing process is you run an informer report and save it, and then run a batch.
No. Sorry, that's not going to work. Now you're adding on an additional, possibly lengthy informer report process to something that's already very manual that should have been automated when the project was first started. I'm sorry, but I'm going to push back on that.
You're just running an informer report.
Which could take a very long time, and in the meantime, we are preventing those applications from being imported until that report runs and finishes. And we've, from the get-go with applications, we wanted to narrow down the amount of time that it takes to process applications. Instead of doing it three times a day, we wanted it to get it down to like every half hour. And that's been a goal from the beginning. From the beginning, the application import process was supposed to be automated, and it never got there.
I'm not asking to be done every time I asked you.
I thought that's what you just said.
No, I think what I was talking about was doing a report before you guys do a batch of changes.
Okay, a batch of changes.
So, like, if you have a person who's going to be doing this, then, you know, next a certain date, you run a report, archive that report, and then make the changes. And thus you have a history of all of the codes that were associated with the student on that date. The next time you guys go do a batch of changes, then another informer, you keep archiving those, and until the process is done, there's 228 students.
The problem is it's ongoing.
Yeah, I'm not talking about...
In the case of the CCC Apply has no way of making sure that a student only has one CCC ID.
I thought that we were going to do the change to import process.
This is a problem that we can't solve. It's not in our system.
So
CCC Apply cannot guarantee that a student will only have one CCC ID ever.
So, okay. So then what were you talking about earlier when you were saying changing the import process so it overwrites
the current process?
The most current.
The current process is that if they have multiple applications or apply to a student, the IDs, it adds new IDs to the list, so they have multiple IDs. We need to choose one ID to send to SSO proxy into MIS.
Okay.
And for at least for SSO proxy, they said is this use the latest ID, use the last ID you got.
Okay.
And so to fix that without having to do them manually is that you set up the CCC apply process to the batch import, the application import process to replace it with the CCC ID on the new application. And they're saying they want it to archive the old ones when it does that. Because at that point, admissions is saying this student, this application is for the student. And so the proper way to handle that is replace it with the old ID, replace it with the new ID.
So just like we do with like the CV data and the SP data, it can't just like translate somehow. I mean, I'm not going to it. It can't translate to only look at that last one without deleting the rest of it?
There's no date associated to it.
Okay. Right. Okay. And it doesn't put them in any sort of order where it associates them?
That I don't know.
Yeah, it's something that's ongoing that has to happen at the time applications are being imported, because that's where the system, our import process, is running algorithms to match records based on various fields. And if it happens to, because the data is close enough that it gets a high enough match and it matches records of an incoming application incorrectly to a record that's already in the system that already has a CCC ID, and now it's putting in this new data and overriding that CCC ID, we now have lost that old CCC ID, and when we in admissions go to correct it, we're going to try and separate out and create two separate accounts, but we no longer have that old CCC ID to put back on the original record that got overridden. So we need a history there. Bless you.
And that saves them time. The only alternative is to go look through all the old applications to try and find the latest application for the student with not very good information.
I mean, all that stuff I think we can still flesh out and discuss in another meeting, but my point was that I think that we need to start down the process of working on that, of correcting the application import so that this, as much as possible, will not be an ongoing thing where A&R has to correct records. And at the same time, I think the two A&R offices need to start working on correcting the records that are out there with the understanding that it's going to take us some time to work through that, those records, and get them all corrected.
Well, the only issue I've heard of that kind of fix, the merger replace sounded like it was a delivered feature. The archive is not a feature I've heard of. Michael, does that sound like a feature one of the choices on the configuration screen?
Which one?
To be able to archive the old value.
No.
Yeah. So that's the one that'll take more custom programming to do.
Are you talking about on the import process?
Yes.
Okay. I thought our import process was already
customized. The merging of fields part. The merging of fields part, however, wasn't.
Yeah.
Okay.
They actually have a configuration choice of replace or append.
Okay.
And the CCC ID is set on append. All right. So, one of the questions is, when do we want to do the SSO proxy? At this point, it sounds like we want to do it when we've got those corrected.
Yeah, and I think we can set a goal. And I think when we start correcting the records and we see how long it takes on average for a staff member to correct one record, that we'll be able to better guesstimate how, you know, calculate out how long it will take. I mean, I think that, and I have significantly less records for crafting, I think I could have staff, you know, get through those by the end of fall, so by the end of the calendar year. Valley may not be able to. They have a lot more records that they have to go correct. So I think we need to look at that, but we can at least estimate once we start doing it based on the amount of time how much time is going to be needed to work on it.
Right. At the moment, it sounds like we don't have to we're not forced to do it before the contract with Canvas goes into effect. So we have the time for that.
Okay.
But the idea is that we're not going to do the proxy until those records are corrected, and we've got the import process fixed. Right? April?
Yes. Okay. My question is, when was this ran to get these numbers?
This was early May. It would be in about... What, the first
May
week of
2nd.
May?
You said May 2nd.
May 2nd was the regular CCC IDs. I think it was that same week. I think it was the first week of May.
Will there be another one ran?
I can set up a way to get it. Informer unfortunately can't tell how many CCC IDs there are with the way it works. But I can set up a report to be able to view it, be able to determine it with some extra Excel stuff. Because we want to do that to keep these errors from coming back up.
So April, I wouldn't even necessarily worry about an updated list right now. You have 602, I have 228. That's going to take a while for us anyway. We can get start on it and start working on those. We have to rerun the list after we fix the import process anyway. So if we fix the import process, if we're doing both simultaneously, we can at least get these numbers down. And then when we get the import process fixed, we'll run a new list and then start working off the new list, which will include any records that have been added incorrectly.
So I understand that, but I'm curious to know between May 2nd that week and now, how many more errors could potentially come in?
Okay.
Yeah, how long of a time period is the 602 cover?
This was any student in the system. So it was as of May, the first week of May, how many students in the system have multiple CCC IDs.
Oh.
They're also not even guaranteed to be, you know, active students.
Exactly.
Okay.
So, can we just analyze as they come in kind of thing? Of what group?
The question is when we do the proxy. That's the requirement that we have. So if, for example, one choice is to simply for these students that have multiple IDs, we don't send an ID, then you could handle it manually. Those students will be required to specify to link one when they log into Canvas or Starfish.
Jason, you said something interesting.
They're not all active.
Yeah. Yeah.
So if they're not active, they're not logging in and using our system. The proxy is not going to be sending anything. And if they do come back to our campuses, they're going to be required to submit a new application. At which point, if we have the import process fixed, it will resolve this situation.
No, I said not guaranteed. I didn't. When I ran those lists, I didn't look at active ones. I just said anything that's got multiple IDs.
Yeah.
Probably need to add that to it.
Yeah, I can do that and come up with shorter list.
Well, that's what I'm thinking is if we did filter that to only identify those that are active, because I think we really only need to fix those that are active.
Yeah.
If we fix the import process, the inactive students, when they come back and submit a new application, the import process will fix it for us.
Active as of the last two terms?
Right.
The current term?
Active as an active academic program. That's
right,
true.
Because that's based on the active two terms because we automatically end those.
Yeah, so if they don't have an active academic program, they'll have to submit an application.
Status, take the numbers down some, and that's less records that we have to worry about.
Yes.
Jason also brought up that for students who do have multiple IDs, if we send the proxy nothing, then when the student goes to lobby to Canvas or Starfish, for example, they will then be prompted to go to an interface or log in somewhere and associate a CCC ID to their account. Do you want to just have let them associate their own IDs?
Does that mean your registration?
No, it's not registration.
No, it's Canvas.
Canvas.
So I would say if it's an active student, we probably need to fix the records because we don't want to add another step for them to use Starfish or Canvas and things like that. But for those that are inactive students, since they're going to have to reapply anyway if they come back, then let's just delete out the IDs, which would force them to have to reapply. It'll record the correct ID number and then solve the problem.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a good idea. So once we fix the active students, then we could do the SSO proxy.
I think so. fix the active and possibly delete out the IDs on the inactive students.
Yes. Yes, that would be that would be a good fix.
If they happen to log in, it would require them then to go log in and identify them.
Yes. It wouldn't send the possibly wrong ID.
Right.
Okay.
Okay.
All right. Then we need for the archive one, is that a project request? Andy? For the archiving of IDs when it replaces them as part of the application processing process, would that be a project request? As far as I know, it's not delivered to do that. So to fix this problem from coming up in the future, the application import needs to replace the CCC ID rather than append new ones. That specific part, I believe, is a configured process. So you can just change a setting in the application import, and it'll fix it. But to be able to add the archive option.
Jason.
Yes.
Jason. The problem right now is that if you're going to put into the IDs on the DADD screen, if you do a replace, it might replace all the IDs on for that record. So it has to be, we need to all, if it comes in, it needs to be going straight to that particular, what do you call it, alternate ID type. We should have an alternate ID type and alternate ID.
Yeah.
But she don't want to replace the others that are existing.
Right. So there's a question whether the delivered process can handle it. Because we don't want it to replace old XAP IDs or any other alternate IDs that are in there as well.
I don't think
just
so.
The CCC ID.
You replace everything.
So the question is, that should be a project or a ticket first?
We need to investigate the level of effort.
Mm-hmm.
So,
ticket first.
Okay. So question is, who's going to submit that ticket? Okay. I can initiate it.
Jason.
All right.
Okay.
Hey, it's Samantha. Really quick, since we're here as a group, I do kind of just want to clarify what Jason was saying in regards to MIS. The CCC IDs are going to be reported because they are required for the summer 2018 but there's a data quality check on MIS's side that will help us as district for reporting that element for all students with unknown unreported, which would be 8 digits of X's. So until these CCIDs get cleaned up, I just proposed perhaps that would be our best route of action to make sure we don't report mismatched IDs, what's being pushed up to the proxy rather than what's being pushed up to MIS. So I just want to clarify that it is a data element that's going to be reported for MIS summer 2018. But we could just report as a district as unknown unreported. I just want to clarify, it is optional to that extent, but it is going to be reported. So that's it.
and from what I talked before, there'd be nothing wrong with reporting X's for everybody.
Negative. There's no data quality checks on MIS's side that are on the other data files that would reject the entire file. Well, since there's none on that specific data element, if we report all X's, which is unknown, unreported, it'll go through with flying colors. It'll be fine.
Okay. So if we can, for example, fix all these multiple ID issues by then we could send it. But otherwise, we could decide to just do all X's.
Correct.
Is that something that MIS, for the MIS committee to decide?
No. Yeah, that would be something that's something that we've already discussed on our MIS committees, but since you mentioned it, that it's optional. To me personally, I wanted to clarify that it is optional to the extent, but I want to give you that caveat as well. So it was just a personal, I wanted to emphasize it is optional to a point.
It has to be reported, but you could report all X's. That's the optional part.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So we have discussed this in our MIS meetings, but I just wanted, because some people in this group are not in those meetings, but I just want to make sure that we're, clear across the board.
Okay. Did they come up with a solution as far as the multiple IDs?
Nope, not even mentioned.
Okay.
Just a week to report that.
Then the one thing that we need to know is when that when they would decide, when that decision needs to happen, and we'll know whether admissions has been able to fix these issues or not.
Yeah, so like I said, for summer, there's no data quality checks, but it was said by MIS, from the Chancellor's MIS team, that that could change in the future. So it, I'm, this is, of course, time sensitive, but we're good for summer 2018.
Okay. All right.
Okay. Are there any miscellaneous topics?
Along with CCC applies for applications, it seems like there's a lot of, I want to say, fake applications coming in. They have first names as numbers and last names as well. Yeah.
A lot of other colleges have been reporting that.
Yeah. So just still import it, or should we delete it when we import?
I don't know.
Well, if you identify it and you know that it's a fake application, you can delete it. I went to the CCC workshops just a couple months ago, and they are aware that it's an ongoing issue and it's becoming bigger and bigger. They suspect that companies are out there trying to get the software, the free software, because Microsoft offers free student accounts for Office 365, and they're trying to give that to people or sell that to people, and so they're trying to get student email accounts to go and get that software. So they are working on a bunch of different ways to identify and remove those fake IDs, ones that they know are coming in that are incorrect and whatnot. And I believe that some of those enhancements are coming out in the update that I think is scheduled to go on next week, the end of next week, on the 31st, NC Apply. So that's coming. If not next week, then very soon, when they do their big annual update.
And one note is that that's when we'll first start using the proxy, because it's apparently required. But that'll be just for staff.
Okay.
And just for logging into Matters CCC Apply.
Okay.